Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
Listening to the first three speakers, it's amazing I'm sober. Oh, Jesus. Chris was my first ever sponsee before Alex, actually. But it's great to be here, and thank you very much. It's great to hear the three of you. My name's Wayne, and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you. I'm just so grateful to be here, and there's so many people in this room that I just love so much. I could spend all night thanking so many people. I'd like to thank my sponsor, Clancy. For once, I am going to thank a few people. And I want to thank Alex, John, Dave K, Andy Red, and Mike D. There's five people. Five people that for over 20 years I've marched this road with, shoulder to shoulder, you know, just consistently. And if you imagine, you know, over 20 years, you know, the pain, the tears, the heartache, the joy, the fun, the things we've gone through together, it's absolutely amazing. I mean, all the other guys and the old ladies that I sponsor, I mean, that's great as well. I just think the word of you all. I wasn't always as happy as what I am today. I mean, Bill Wilson described AA as a way of life that's incredibly more wonderful as time passes, and that's been my experience. I just remember those days when I was drinking. I was just so eaten up with fear and this constant turmoil, and I was just tortured in my mind constantly, that inner conflict. And I just worry about everything, and nobody understood me. I couldn't speak to anybody, and it was just an awful place to be. And you know, the only thing that would ever make it all right would be that sense of ease and comfort, which comes instantly by taking a few drinks. You know, just the crack of that bottle of vodka or the ping of that can of Super Tenants, and I'd think instantly I'd feel at ease. You know, I'd be okay. All of a sudden, I was where the party was at. It didn't matter about any of you. You know, all of a sudden, you know, I was what I wanted to be, and I just felt comfortable. I felt better. You know, I just preferred being drunk than sober. I preferred seeing the world through a drunken haze, just one step removed from everybody. You know, I'd walk through town, you know, under the influence, and there'd just be something invisible between me and everybody else, and it just made everything so much better. You know, it just, you know, life was more comfortable. You know, and nobody seemed to understand me. You know, and I would drink in my bedsit in the attic, and I'd be up there drinking. I usually drank alone, and you know, a car would go down outside, and I would just jump out of my skin. You know, somebody would ring the doorbell, and my knees would physically knock together. You know, in absolute terror. And I just needed a drink. You know, and I just knew. You know, if I wasn't going to drink, I was not going to sleep. You know, I'd be sweating, I'd be shaking, and I felt so ill at ease. And you know, I just needed another drink just to smooth everything out in a few drinks, and I felt better. You know, I mean, I remember I used to drink. I went down the back of Union Street, and I remember one Saturday night, I was down there, and I was walking down towards the academy. And there was a whole row of blokes going toilet up against the wall. And I noticed one of my mates, that's my mate Ken, my best mate. I haven't seen him in ages. So I did what any good guy would do who was drinking, and I just charged over, I jumped on his back. I said, "Right, Ken." And the next minute I found I was in the middle of Union Street with about 10 guys kicking the hell out of me. And a few minutes later, Ken turned up, and they were saying, "Why is he laughing? Why is he laughing?" And he said, "It's Wayne." In every weekend, from that day on, Saturday night, I'd be down the town with all the hooligans. I'd be getting in a fight every night. I'd be smashing windows, just like the other guys. But the difference with me is that Monday morning, I'd be drinking on the way to work. Monday morning, I'd be drinking the vodka on the way to work. I'd be hiding vodka in a Coke can at work. I was a lady's hairdresser. That didn't work well. So I was doing that. I would drink on the way home. I'd drink whenever I could. My first thought in the morning, every morning, was, when am I going to drink? You know, when am I going to drink? Because I knew just life was going to be just too uneasy. It was going to be too difficult. It's going to be too painful. You know, that inner conflict, you know, just a few drinks just seemed to smooth out all those harsh edges. You know, and life was more bearable. And but it wasn't like I didn't try to stop drinking. It wasn't like I didn't try to control my drinking. I went to the doctor, and the doctor said to me, Wayne, said, look, I mean, look out that window. He said, look, see that bench? He said, what do you see? And I looked and said, well, I see a bench. He said, exactly. You know, there are no alcoholics in Plimpton. You know, I mean, I believe there's actually quite a few from Plimpton here these days. We should probably go and get him struck off. But yeah, I went to counsellors. You know, I tried to control my drinking. You know, I went into a treatment facility. I went in there a miserable, suicidal alcoholic. You know, a few weeks later, I emerged a miserable, suicidal amateur psychiatrist. But the last thing they said to me, when I left was, go to Alcoholics Anonymous. So I started going to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'd go to meetings every night of the week, and I'd walk to meetings in the rain, the snow, the cliches. I would go to lots of meetings, you know. And I did what the people around me did. I did what I saw others do. You know, I'd go to a meeting and I would turn up when I wanted to turn up. You know, I'd leave when I wanted to leave. I'd wear what I wanted to wear. I'd share what I wanted to share. And I shared at every meeting. You know, I shared at every meeting I went to. And I moaned and I whined and I blamed everybody for my problems. I blamed everything for the way I was. I mean, everything was everybody else's fault. You know, sometimes I would share and I would conjure up a tear, and it was heartbreaking. You know, I mean, people would come up to me after the meeting, they'd give me a big hug and say, that was a great share, Wade. That was a great share. And I thought it was, you know. And I there were some bright, colourful characters. There's some great people. But there was nothing of any depth and weight which was going to treat my alcoholism. And I would I did this for 6 months. I mean, I would drink every other Friday, really, you know, because, you know, I'd get home from the meeting and I'd just be pacing around like a caged tiger. It was, you know, I just wanted a drink. You know, I needed that sense of ease and comfort. You know, living life sober was just painful. It was not pleasant. You know, it was just not a nice place to be. You know, I went 11 weeks once. I mean, I remember one night, I came home from one of these meetings and did what I normally did. I had got a drink, and I was sitting in a phone box with a bottle of cider, and two of the guys from the meeting must have seen me, and they parked the car right outside the door of the phone box. Oh, God. And so they come out. I'm sat in this phone box with a bottle of cider. I've just left the meeting. And these guys, you all right, Wayne? I said, yeah. Can I still be the treasurer? I mean, it was the only enthusiastic thing I could think to say. If you think that's funny... They said yes. So, 6 months into AA, just going to meetings, playing the victim. You know, I was a victim of my alcoholism. I was getting nowhere. You know, I was just feeling worse. You know, AA was not working for me. And then one night, I went to a different meeting. It was a different venue. It was a different night. Same venue. And I came across the people they warned me about. I came across these people that were on fire. I mean, they were excited about Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, these guys were enthusiastic. You know, they spoke with conviction. They had a purpose. They seemed to have a direction. They had something that I desperately needed and I desperately wanted. You know, they would take none of my shit. I mean, Jesus. I mean, one of them sat at the back. I mean, they were horrid. They were absolutely, I mean, they really gave me a hard time. these guys, they wiped the floor with me. And they were all saying the same thing. You know, big book sponsor steps, big book sponsor steps, again and again and again. You know, but I heard it. You know, thank God they were saying it again and again and again. Because that night I heard it. And I heard it sufficiently that I was able to act on the information received. And, you know, they were all saying, you know, the same sort of stuff, you know, sponsor, etc. And I eventually got a sponsor, which was, and I was sponsorable. You know, it was like, for once in my life, I was ready to do something. You know, at long last, I saw, I felt, I believed. You know, it's what Bill Wilson says. You know, I saw, I felt, and I believed. You know, for the first time in AA meeting, you know, I saw that I could live comfortably sober and actually enjoy sobriety. I mean, what an amazing thing. You know, so I had to get one of these bloody sponsors. And I eventually got my first long-term sponsor was, wow. I mean, like I said, he just didn't seem to care about me. It was horrible. I mean, I would ring him up and I would say, oh, she's nagging again. It's, oh. He'd say, well, bless you, lad. Your stories touch me deeply. You know, go and read your big book. You know, I'd ring him another time and he'd say, well, bless you, lad. It's a deeply moving story. Now go and work with a newcomer. And I thought, this guy's just not listening to me. You know, he doesn't care how I feel. And you know, over time, I saw that he cared deeply how I feel. He was just more concerned with what I do, because what I do affects how I feel. And if there are any new people here, if you take nothing away from my share tonight, just listen to this. You know, you can sit in the middle of a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. You can sit in the middle of the best meeting in the world, week in, week out, for years. But if you do not take the 12 steps, if you are like me, your life will get systematically and progressively worse over any prolonged period. You know, I had to take the steps, and I needed a sponsor to help me. You know, so I had this old fool who kept telling me off and kept telling me to do irrelevant actions. You know, why do you want to work with speak to a bloke when it's your wife who's the problem? I mean, where's the sense in that? You know, but I would take these irrelevant actions. You know, I'd work with newcomers, I'd read that book, you know, and I quite liked the book, if I'm honest. I used to read the book, and I would do all these things. And, you know, my outlook brightened up. You know, for the first time, I began to get a bit of hope. You know, I began to see, this could work for me. You know, what these guys are saying, you know, because they were on fire. They literally set the room on fire. They were just great to be around. And, you know, I could have it. And, you know, I mean, there was a day came when I called David, my sponsor, and I was in the shit. You know, I'd really pissed the wife off. And I remember the words, you know, he said to me, you know, when I went to him, I've got to tell him. He said, oh, bless you, lad. I'm on your side. If you're honest with me, I'm on your side. And that's a deal I make with everybody I sponsor. If you're honest with me, I'm on your side. And it was just a wonderful thing. And I mean, somebody asked recently, I mean, what is the minimum requirement to be a sponsor? Well, it's a simple question. It's an easy question. You know, I like to, as a sponsor, like, you know, we want people to get through the steps, preferably. You know, and we tell them to read this, read that. You know, we like them to be prepared. We like them to take a bit of responsibility. But the answer to the question, I mean, really, what is the minimum requirement to be a sponsor? The minimum requirement to be a sponsor is that the sponsee will act on the information given by the sponsor. Now, I need to be able to listen to my sponsor. I need to be able to seek advice, accept direction. That's the minimum requirement. It's got nothing to do with the sponsor. You know, it's just, am I ready to take action? Am I ready to do what is required to overcome this state of hopeless state of mind and body? And I've got a lovely story. I mean, the best definition of sponsorship that I've ever heard, the funny thing is, it's actually not a definition about sponsorship, but to me it is. And it's a long, drawn-out long-winded story, but I think it's a lovely story, and a lot of the new people might like it. It's Bill Wilson. And you imagine him in the 30s, 40s, 50s, I don't know when it was. He was in the New York clubhouse. You imagine it in the 40s, 50s, this old New York clubhouse. He said he'd had a hard day at work, and he was laid on the bed. He's working with newcomers all day, a bit like Gavin. And he said, I could hear the rain crashing down on the old tin roof. I can just picture the scene, you know, the old tin roof and the neon signs outside in New York in the 30s and 40s. And he's just relaxed down. The janitor knocks on his door. He says, Bill, we've got some bum from St. Louis just turned up. Do you want me to turn him away? You think, oh. He's there thinking, oh, give him 15 minutes. Send him up. So he's getting himself ready, thinking, 15 minutes, I can chill out. So here's this guy walking down the hallway, and he can hear this walking stick. And this guy's taking a long time. This guy's clearly he's struggling. This guy's struggling. And this guy walked in, and he led him in. He opened the door, and this guy took his hat off, took his scarf off, took his coat off. He saw that he had a clerical collar. And he said, his eyes radiated a grace. There was a presence in the room with him. You know, that man was called Edward Dowling, who became Bill's spiritual sponsor. You know, that was the second AA, the 15-minute AA conversation that actually lasted a lifetime. The reason I tell that story is, Bill actually says he did his fifth step that night. But Edward Dowling was, it's well known, he was crippled with arthritis. He was a man who was in a lot of pain. He was in an awful lot of pain. He struggled. But he said he was in New York one year, and he was watching some ice skaters. And he said they were just gliding across the ice with so much grace that they made me feel like I could do the same. To me, that's sponsorship. Because when I arrived here and I needed help and somebody had a solution, you know, when I just believed, you know, I can't do this. You know, I can't get through this. It's just too difficult. I'm not going to be able to survive. You know, I'm just not up to it. My sponsor wanted more for me than I ever thought possible for myself. And I trusted him and I respected him. So I started doing what he said. So to me, that's sponsorship. And when you find that person that you trust and you respect enough, you know, and they'll make you feel like you can do that. You know, you can do this. You know, even when you really believe you just can't, you can. And that's the magic of sponsorship. And anyway, David, my first sponsor, he eventually died. He died sober. And I had a couple of years of temporary sponsors, really, sort of less than ideal sponsors. And one of the people I sponsored, a guy called Steve from Bristol, was the founder of this group. He'd just been to the World Convention, and he brought back a load of tapes. And I hate AA tapes. I do not like listening to speaker tapes. I'm not that sort of, I just don't like, I've never liked it. I don't like doing it. And he said, if you don't listen to any of them, just listen to this one old guy. Anyway, so I thought, okay. I listened to this guy, and I couldn't believe it. Now, this guy was saying, it wasn't more than the fact, this guy's just like me. I mean, he was saying how, in his area, he was known as a dictator-type sponsor, that he called him a right-wing fascist AA pig. And he said that the conference delegates wouldn't go to his group because there was too much enthusiasm in the room. And I thought, wow. I thought, this is a guy at the other side of the world I've never heard of. That's brilliant. I loved it. And I remember I'd been sponsoring Alex for quite a few years at this point. And I'd lost most of my hair. In fact, to be honest, I was completely bald. And one other thing this guy said in his share, he said when he arrived at AA, he had no front teeth. When he reached spiritual purity, they grew back. So I asked him to sponsor me. Now, I was calling this guy Every week for 6 months. I called him every week for 6 months. I emailed him every week for 6 months. Didn't even know what he looked like, except for maybe he had no teeth, I don't know. But 6 months in, he was at a meeting. He was over from Los Angeles, and he was living at a meeting in Bristol. And so I went up there, and some people said, there he is over there. And he was shaking hands with people. He was walking down. And thought, it's my moment. This is my time. I'm going to meet my sponsor. So I stuck my hand out, and I said, hi, I'm Wayne. He looked at me, just a blank expression. He looked me straight in the eye. He put two hands on my head and said, you'll never drink again, kid. And off he went. That was the end of that. Now, I mean, I guess at some point I reached spiritual purity because my hair grew back. But it's. But I would have been forgiven for saying, I'm not putting up with that. You know, why should I take this shit off this old bloke? You know, why? Why? Who puts up with that? You know, I'm not. Why should I? Why? But before I got to my seat, which was no further than where Jim is, I processed this in my mind. There is perhaps not another human being in the world at this moment who I will listen to. Now, you don't need to be pally-pally and frivolous and friendly with your sponsor. You just have to listen to your sponsor. This is working for me. And that was that. I mean, what a thing. But why was I able to do that? Because, you know, there was a time when I would never have behaved like that. There was a time when I would never, ever have reacted like that. And let me just say, there will come a time when every single person in this room, everybody, will come to a point in time where their sponsor says something that they don't like. Everybody. And I'll have a choice. You know, have I got step one or have I not got step one? Because all I used to ever do was something like that would happen. Somebody would tell me, you know, a teacher would tell me off. The police would say something to me, or the referee on the football pitch would say something I disagreed with. Somebody would say something and I would just say, screw you, I'm out of here. Pride and resentment would just jump to the defense of my ego. And it kept my life in a perpetual cycle of insanity. I just kept going around and around and around and getting worse and worse and worse because I would not listen. I would not accept advice. I would accept nothing. I would brook no control from man or God. I would try and protect that inner integrity. I just was not going to listen. I was not going to be told. But for some reason, with this guy, at this time, I was able to. And, you know, that's what I needed to do. That I needed to listen because, you know, normal people find it amusing. You know, we are like children. It's like, that's how we grow. You know, when I face and overcome difficulties and things which, you know, I previously would have said, screw it. That's how I grow, by just getting through it. You know, pain is resistance to growth. So that's what, you know, like I said, we're like kids. I mean, if you imagine you've got a car full of kids, so you take them to the beach, little kids, they open the car, and all of a sudden, what do? The first thing they all do, they want to run to the beach. And the parents are there, just, hey, stop, get in the car. We've got to cross the road, it's dangerous. You know, we are like children. I don't want anybody to ruin my fun. I just want to have fun. You know, I come home from school. I don't want to do my homework. I want to go and play football. I want to have fun. You know, I didn't want to mature. I didn't want to take responsibility. And in Alcoholics Anonymous, I've had to take responsibility for my own recovery. And, you know, I've not always been great. I've not always been a perfect example. I'll give you I'll give you another story in a minute, but a little bit more about this ego thing. It's like, because, you know, when I came in, you know, my ego was just crushed. You know, my ego, I was on the floor, and I'm sure everybody can identify, I was just on the floor, crushed with ego. And slowly over time, we start building that wall up again. And, you know, if we get fortunate, we can just kick it back down again. And you see new sponsors, they're walking around like little Hitlers. You know, we're good copiers, but bad interpreters, and they start shouting at sponsors because they never see the whole picture. You know, what a good sponsor doesn't try to break down the wall of the ego. A good sponsor builds up the alcoholic so they no longer need it. And, you know, I had this rule for 20 years. I had a rule. I just keep away from the women in AA. Don't get involved in the women in AA because they're nothing but trouble. They're all mad anyway. You know, just keep away from the women. And, I mean, you can imagine the conversation with my sponsor when I broke my own rule. And I mean, he was all right. But the best way to sum it up is the story of the man with two brains. Now, this guy, he's madly in love with his wife. He loves his wife dearly. And he's coming home from work, reversing into the garage. And he accidentally knocks her over and kills her. And he's devastated. Anyway, a week later at the funeral, he sees this other woman across the other side of the cemetery. And he, wow, is it meant to be? Is it meant to be? And he calls his sponsor, and you can imagine that one. And so he goes home, and he's in the front room. He says, right, okay, God, if you don't want me to see this woman, just give me a sign. So he stood there in the front room, and he stood there like this. And all of a sudden, the windows are crashing in, and the curtains are blowing around. The chandelier is swimming around and around and around. Cracks in the wall, and it's covered in dust, and it's just mayhem. And it goes quiet. He stood there. He says, just any old sign. You know. So, I mean, for me, but I tell you now, you know, that was the worst experience of my life. You know, that really was. It was the worst experience of life. I mean, Clancy, Bob Dowell, they both said most people that go through what I went through drink again. And but it's become the best thing that's ever happened to me. It really has. Because of the help and the love and the support of people in this room and a lot of other people. And just by continuing to take the actions. I mean, I used to hate the word spiritual. I hated this spiritual nonsense. And, you know, I used to, you know, to me, you know, I'd hear people and they'd share and you could hardly hear them. And I just want to shout out, speak up! You know, and they'd start talking about, you know, I'm grateful, I'm full overbound with joy and rainbows and fluffy bunny rabbits. And I just wanted to punch them. To me, the people that were spiritual were the people that continued to take the right actions. They would try through thick and thin to just keep taking the right actions. People who have courage in defense of other people, regardless of the personal consequences to themselves. You know, people who have the ability to sanctify pain. Because in the difficult times, you know, I've had to get grateful. Those are the things and those are the people that inspired me. And, you know, I've never, ever lowered my ideals just because I've not been able to live up to them. That was another thing I was taught. You know, so, you know, but to maintain all this, I mean, let me just tell you another thing about difficulties and pain. You know, Bill Wilson, one of the best, I mean, it's just a great story. I mean, Bill Wilson came home from work another night and he was lying on the bed and he actually said, I was sore, I was pissed off. And he actually said, I was in far from spiritual mood. Half an hour later, Bill Wilson had wrote the 12 steps. The single one piece of writing which has saved more alcoholic lives than every other piece of writing combined. What an amazing thing to do when you're in far from spiritual mood. We just take the actions regardless. You know, over the years I've seen so many people come and go, people who are just far more intelligent than me, people that are just much better speakers than me. I've seen people who are just nicer people than me who've just faded away. They've stopped taking the actions. You know, and it almost becomes like a popularity contest. It becomes, you know, all of a sudden they find a common enemy and I'm the enemy. And, you know, I've had a knife put in my stomach. I've been slandered online. I counted up the times I've been mentioned on a website and my picture taken 200 times. You know, I've been slandered. I've been gossiped about. But I've kept marching. And I remember in my early days, I would call David B. And I was about 5, 10 years sober. I used to get quite upset about it. And he would say, well, bless you, lad. Just spend more time with the people who love you. Spend more time with the people who care about you. You know, 20 years on, I'm on the phone laughing about it with Clancy. Clancy taught me something really cool. And he says to me, kid, Just use the short form of the Serenity Prayer. Now, I know the Serenity Prayer. I know the Serenity Prayer. We all know the Serenity Prayer. And it's quite short. Is there a shorter form of the Serenity Prayer? So I said, what's the short form of the Serenity Prayer, Clancy? I'm going to give you the sanitized version. I said, screw them! After a while, you become more secure with what you do. It doesn't matter about the opinions of other people. It doesn't matter about the next in thing. You just keep doing what you've always done. That's just the way it works. So, you know, to maintain what we found is the most difficult, but the most important thing. I mean, I found out recently, they've got a saying, and it says, you know, when the snows fall and the white winds come, the lone wolf dies, but the pack survives. And Clancy also said something similar. He said, he sent me that letter about 10 years ago when he was 50 years sober, and he said, the one thing that I've learned in all this time, above everything else, is that sometimes we really do think that our case is different. Sometimes we really do feel like you people don't understand. But whatever you do, don't leave the pack. Okay? When the white winds come and the snows fall, the lone wolf dies, but the pack survives. So I've just got to keep doing it. I've got to keep taking those actions. And sometimes, you know, that's not easy. I mean, this is a great group to be marching in. This is an absolute. I mean, somebody once said to me an old timer a few years ago, said, "Is AA changing in your area?" I said, "AA may well be changing in my area, but it doesn't change at my home group. This group has done what it's always done, and that's the amazing thing. This is the reasons I like this group, and why this group has helped me and enabled me to have a good life and a good sobriety. I mean, it started 25 years ago. There are people here with 25 years sobriety. There are people here with 20 years, 15 years, 10 years, 5 years, all the way down. No, there are people who are willing and able and have done service at every level of service, you know, from the General Service Board, conference, region, intergroup. That is a group at the heart of Alcoholics Anonymous. That is a group at the heart of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, this group, I mean, when I was 5 years sober, I used to think, we just started this group. A good group was a big group full of people who were so on the program, they never had a bad day. That was what I thought a good group was. With experience and over time, what I know a good group is full of people who have survived and overcome all sorts of difficulties, all sorts of trials, whether it's health trials, whether it's emotional relationship trials, money difficulties, you know, all sorts of things. And we're so blessed at this group to have people that have just, you know, I mean, they're just such an example to me, and they help me to keep marching, you know. So just keep marching, regardless how we feel. You know, sometimes we have to turn up through gritted teeth with tears in our eyes. We just got to suit up, show up, and just take the actions and try to live by structure as opposed to emotion. Just do these things, and we get through it, and just things improve. You know, things get better. You know. To me, I mean, I just love. There's a lot of love at this group. You know, the small acts of kindness that people do one for another. You know, whether it's just, you know, meeting up with somebody for coffee, or there's no end of things we do, and. You know, I'll just finish on this because the light is gone. I don't know how long I've been going on for. You know, we just try to be the best example that we can be. We just try to be the best example that we can be. It's not always going to be a very good one. I mean, I've not always been a very good one. I've not been half as bad as they made me out to be. You know, I broke my rule once. Once. In 30 years. That's not a bad record. It's not good, but it's not a bad record. I've just tried to turn up, try to help people, just try to do the best I can. You know, so you, new people, just get a sponsor, get somebody that you're going to somebody that's going to make you get off your chair and get to the door and start helping people. You know, just try to be the best example that you can be. Just keep taking the actions, and regardless of what is new, regardless of what is cool, regardless of what is now trendy, because there's always different things going on, just keep doing what you've always done. Just keep marching, just keep walking the road, and you'll have a great life here in Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.